This is from Rainer Maria Rilke, the Sonnets to Orpheus. Call me to the one among your moments that stands against you ineluctably, but again forever turned away when you think you've captured it at last. We are already free and were dismissed where we thought we would soon be at home. Anxious, we keep longing for a foothold, at times too young for what is old and too old for what has never been. Doing justice only where we praise, because we are the branch, the iron blade, and sweet danger ripening within. How fleeting conditions are. And when you're experiencing something or seeing something in a moment and you think that this is it and it's just so incredible and marvelous, but you can't describe it, you don't even know what it is, and then it's gone and you never get it back and you always keep wanting it back. Like a dog's imploring glance. You know, oh, come back, come be with me, or whatever we think that the best moments are for us, and then they disappear. And you keep trying to get that back, like happinesses in life that come and then they're gone. And we want that same happiness again, but how do you get that moment back? And then life is gone, or life is going, or life's good moments you think are in the past and you want to haul them into the present. Then the present is gone and you're in the future and you don't have time. Is time real? Not really real. Then what is it all? We're just finding out. We're exploring. We can't speak about it. We can't describe what it actually is that captures that moment. Nothing can actually capture a moment. It's just an idea of what happiness is. And the Buddha talks about impermanence. To really understand impermanence is to know that it is not something you can repeat, but it's just to be present for things as they are when they arrive and letting them go in that moment, and then be left with that understanding of the impermanence, not trying to own it or capture it, or keep it in any way, no matter how wonderful it might seem. That's just an impression, and it will always be different. So we listen. We listen, we watch, and we wait. We listen, we watch, and we wait. But is it possible to wait without waiting? To wait without any expectation, like this is going to stop, or the noisy people are going to leave, or the troublesome characters are not going to come back in our life. We cannot plan things, control them, create conditions to agree with how we want. So the practice is really about opening and letting go in such a way that whatever we receive, we can receive it with a good heart, with an open heart. Because if we don't, then we will suffer. And the suffering happens only because the mind is too tight to receive. Because we believe that there is time and that we can get to a better kind of a moment. But to let those moments pass and not try to get them back, and receive each new moment, even if it's painful. There is something in receiving that painful experience which can teach us, it can stretch us. But who are we anyway? What's being stretched? What is this we-ness that is known? And this knowing quality of the heart, can we experience and understand in and of itself? Rather than looking at experience and objects and the good, the bad, the joyful, the not joyful, the pain, the pleasure, and punctuate our life according to that, can we develop that which just knows the present moment, just the knowing quality and the ability to receive the way a valley receives a flood? It just receives it. It doesn't speak about it. It doesn't react. It doesn't mean to be a stone, but not to be a person with opinions, because that isn't what we are. All that's changing is not what we are. But we believe in it. We're so connected to it. It's very difficult to think, this isn't who I am. But the heart, that quality of knowing experience, knowing life, knowing moments, knowing the changingness, knowing the impermanence, knowing the not-selfness of it all, that ability to be present, to receive, to understand, to let go. We witness the truth, and just the witnessing itself is a quality, an energetic presence, and a purity that can be sharpened and honed just by opening to it, just by trusting it, developing it. And we do that by emptying the mind of all the other deposits that we've received for our whole life, this life, other lifetimes. Even if we don't believe in other lifetimes, that doesn't matter. But we are in this lifetime. So we know this. And we know that it goes up and it goes down. And it has its beauty and its terror. And it's just like one elongated poem that we drink and spit out, sometimes so upset and sometimes so elated. But what is it that receives all that and is unchanged by it? There is that within us. There is that ability or that reality to understand and just be like the valley or be like the mountain that doesn't move, does not change with whatever this, like the sun. Well, the sun is something in, using the sun metaphorically as a light that falls unequivocally on all beings without saying, I like you, so here's some light, but I don't like you, so you can't have it. Look at the flowers in the field. They all get the sun. The creatures, even the fishers. We don't like the fishers because they eat the cats. They look pretty mean. I saw a fisher the other day, the whole thing for the first time, and I thought, what is that horrible creature? And then I caught myself. It's not horrible. Fishers have mums. And to a mother fisher, this is the best thing in the world. It's my little darling baby. But we are so full of opinions about the good and the bad and what we like and don't like, and we choose and we want this and we don't want that. But what if we were like the space or the sky that just watched it all arise and cease, without eliminating any of it? Just to receive it. I heard a story about recently a man that went for a walk in the mountains and he disappeared, and they sent out a search party to look for him and they couldn't find him. And days went by and it got more and more serious that this man was missing alone, and then they sent out one last search party to find him. And they found him by a fluke, but he had already accepted the fact that he's probably going to die. They found him all curled up in a little ball, and they said he looked like a rock. That's why they couldn't see him, because he wasn't wearing dark clothing. He looked just like a stone. And in the airplane, they were looking down for something that looked like a person, but he was all curled up like a rock and had accepted that he was going to die. So he became like a rock. He just lay down to die and be a rock, just be, receive what would happen, whatever it was. I don't know if that's what his mind state was, but when they described the position, I thought, what does it mean to let the body go and to enter into dying? What kind of state can we assume when the time comes for the elements to return to the elements? Who is it that dies? What is that dying? People are so afraid to speak about dying, death and dying. So are we this body that goes back to the elements? Are we just earth, air, fire, and water? What about this consciousness? What is that? What happens to that? So if we have an investigative attitude and we look deeply within and observe what it is that knows experience, that knows the ins and outs of these breaths, the ins and outs of these lives, our born, birth, being born, our living, our breathing, our experiencing, our enacting, all these things that happen to this psychological or mental, energetic ability to know. What happens to consciousness itself? And the most important aspect of this whole life is the moral quality of that knowing. The most superior way of developing that knowing is through the purity of the mind, the purity of the heart. It's really important for us to contemplate that, to develop that quality, because the truth of what we are can best be known when our ability to know, which is based on the purity of the knowing without opinions, without preferences, then we realize how much virtue in our thinking, virtuous thought, virtuous speech, and virtuous action, how much that plays into our ability to know the truth of what we are. And that's a moral life, a moral way of being. We call it a beingness. And that is the goodness within us, whatever you want to call it. Some people call it God, but I think of it more as godness. And it's not divinity, because divinity implies some kind of being, a being, but it isn't a being. It's more like a verb. It's more like a process that is indescribable. It's ineluctably close to us, but we cannot describe it. It's that most exalted love, but you cannot describe it. But you can feel it. You can taste it. You can know it. You can bring it into the present moment with the heart. It's an intuitive quality. We can develop it. And when that love is insurmountable and indefatigable, it never tires. It can never be destroyed, no matter what kind of terrible things might happen to us. That love will always forbear and be available to us. Even in our dying moment, we can still turn to that loving knowing of the present awareness of the last breath and offer this to the earth, to the water, to the air, to the sun. Heat, light. But because we are full of fear of things that we only know through ideas, we create a distance between ourselves and that knowledge. That quality of love may seem far from us, but it isn't. It's ineluctably close, almost unspeakably. We cannot know it through the senses. We know it through the bowing of the heart to the present moment. It's a surrender of power, and yet is the greatest power we could express. The Buddha had such vast understanding of human psychology. So this mother's love coming through the giving birth to a child is it's a labor of love and very painful. But to be willing to endure that amount of pain. And the Buddha talks about the mother's love in very high terms, as very sacrificing, self-sacrificing love. He emulates it a lot. We chant like the power of metta. It's like he likens it to the power of a mother's love, a good mother. For those of you that a good father that have children and know what that is like. Having never had a child physically. I can't. But I know that my mother, I know the love that my parents showed to me. Whenever I think of that, I just want to weep out of gratitude and joy. It was unlimited. It was boundless. They would give their skin. So that quality is present in this world, very much. But it isn't a being, it's not a person. It's just a dimension of expression. There are no words. It's ineluctably present. Which is why I found that quote so powerful. Call me to the one among your moments that stands against you ineluctably. Because we are already free. We are already at home.